Beyond the Mic with Sean Dillon.
We're joined on the Star Line by a dad living a dual life by day. Member of the San Francisco Police Department. By night, he's a jaw-dropping blast of crime and punishment as an author. On weekends, though, he's losing games of Clue to his daughter. We welcome the author of Hard Town, Adam Plantinga.
Thanks for having me, Sean. That's high praise.
Adam, let's go beyond the mic. Hard Town is a sequel to your book, The Ascent. Why, other than someone bagging up a truck of money, did you want to continue Kurt's story?
You know, I had another story in there that I wanted to unpack. The first book takes place predominantly in a violent men's maximum security prison. But with the second book, I wanted to sort of go more open world. So he's investigating some sinister goings on in a small town in Arizona. And it's just sort of a bigger story, bigger scope. The plot actually has a global implications. And I can't tell you how pleased I am that I was able to just say that last sentence, global implications, because I think it just sounds awesome.
What makes a story about the same character so fulfilling as an author?
Well, he's a character I'm fond of, and I'm tough on him. I sort of drop him into one meat grinder in the first book and then a different kind of meat grinder in the second. But I think the cool part about writing a series or writing a second book is that the character sort of changes and grows, and he sort of reveals different parts of himself. So he's not sort of static, but he's got a little movement to him.
Now, normally I avoid spoilers, but as a dog lover, I'm going to give away one thing from your book. Quote, he's been their dog, his and Emily's, and now Hudson was the only family he had left. One of the last cords that still tethered him to his wife, unquote. Why was it important for Kurt's character's development for him to lose Hudson, his chow shepherd?
So there's a quote that the book begins with that is from Emerson, under every deep, a lower deep opens. And that's his lower deep, losing sort of the last thing that connects him to his late wife. In terms of the story, it provides the fuel for him, the motivation for him to go about. And I don't want to give too much away, but it drives him to make some pretty dark moral choices. And that's the kind of book I was just interested in writing. I wanted to spend some time in the gray. There's a fair amount of that in police work as well. But it's not a decision I took lightly. I have a chow. I'm a dog lover. I guess for me, at the end of the day, the only real rule in writing, and this isn't anything I came up with myself, but I've heard smarter authors say, is does it work? Does the story work? And hopefully, you know, the reader thinks that it does.
You've written five novels before your first published one was a USA Today bestseller. How has overcoming adversity changed the way you see writing and the way you see yourself?
I wrote five novels that are unpublished, and for the sake of readers everywhere, should remain that way. But I think I had to write some sort of crappy novels to write one halfway decent one. And boy, I'll tell you, it makes having some level of achievement that much sweeter, because you put the work in. There's not too many overnight success stories. There's a few, but even the first, you know, the cream of the crop have a lot of lousy unpublished novels in their sort of deep back drawer. And I was listening to Dennis Lehane speak not too long ago, and he's one of my writing heroes. And after he'd already written so many terrific novels, Mystic River, Shutter Island, he started a novel, and I may not get this exactly right, but you know, he got maybe 100 or so pages into it, and then he canned it because it wasn't working. And I thought, holy smokes, Dennis Lehane can't make this book work? And that makes me feel a lot better about myself.
Adam, what motivates you on a daily basis?
Well, like a lot of people, I wear a lot of hats. I'm a husband, I'm a dad, I'm a cop, I'm a writer. And I just try to do all those things as well as I can. Some days are better than others, but it's all just sort of a balancing act.
Adam Plantinga, author of Hardtown, joins us Beyond Mike. Your fellow author and Beyond the Mike two-time alum, Alex Cano, warned you about this. It's the Rocky Nate. Eight random questions. Answer with the first thing that comes to your mind.
I'm told you ask the questions that other men are scared to ask.
There is absolutely no pressure. From your book, Adam, quote, "Last week, I bought some lady a disco ball and a tub of tapioca pudding. 3 a.m, I don't ask," end quote. What's the weirdest thing you've seen on the beat?
You know, I saw a guy who was wearing a wolf mask on a scooter with no pants. And he was heading past one of our more colorful corners. And honestly, I don't even think that was the weirdest thing I saw there that day.
Did he have underwear on?
He did. That was his only nod to the decorum.
What's the movie you watch when you need to relax?
I'm a huge fan of Fletch. I think that is maybe close to the perfect comedy. And I used to watch it. I watched it with my dad, and it was the way we bonded, and that makes it special to me.
We'll put your tab on the Underhills.
Yes, very good.
Best thing in the world about being a girl, Dad.
Oh, man. You know, I once, my girl's a little older now, but I used to play with them and play with the dolls and everything. And one time I came to work, I got called in on one of my cases, and I was interrogating a suspect about a pretty serious crime. And afterwards, you know, I went to the bathroom to wash up, and I saw I had transfer glitter all over my face and, you know, from playing with my girls and their dolls. And the guy didn't say anything. Maybe he just thought that that's how we presented ourselves.
Who is the most jacked author?
Boy, you know, I got to meet Harlan Coben at a recent writer's conference, and that guy's bringing a lot to the table.
Really?
Actually, we got a picture together, and a lot of the comments in the picture were how much more jacked he looked than me. So I've just begun my training for a photo number two.
How bad was it?
I mean, I'd like to think I hold my own, but I think he's putting some work in.
Banging and clanging.
Yeah, that's right.
How much time in the makeup chair did it take for you before you went on Dr. Phil?
Yeah. You know, I got to say, I've never had that experience before. So there was a very nice fellow who kind of walked me through it and had the little brush and putting on the stuff. And I was there for a while, and I thought to myself, the fellows at the station house could just see me now. But that's the price of, of the business.
What's your favorite song from the Footloose soundtrack?
The song Footloose has some legs, but I think my favorite is Heaven Help the Man. That's just first rate. I still have it on my phone. I listen to it from time to time, and I'm very grateful that other people can't hear that's what I'm listening to. But, you know, it's a guilty pleasure. That movie's aged reasonably well.
Adam, favorite flavor of donut, and how do you drink your coffee?
I have a crippling addiction to apple fritters, and not just your typical apple fritter, but the ones that's so big that it almost hangs off both sides of the plate. I like to tell you that I drink coffee black because that's kind of the toughest, but I put some cream and sugar in there so it gets a little cloudy. There's a saying in the business that police work is fueled by two things: coffee and victims' tears.
Board game that your kids can't beat you at. They beat you like an arc at a biker rally at Clue. What can't they beat you at?
I know. She still dominates me. I can usually take her in the old school Trivial Pursuit, because many of those things happened way before she was born. So I lean into that.
It's time for the back half with author of Hardtown, Adam Plantinga, be on the mic. Adam, how has the blight of fentanyl changed the way you see addiction in your community?
Boy, fentanyl has just changed the game. It sort of took root within the last several years, and it's just, and you know, I'm a cop in San Francisco. You just see the devastation that it creates. I mean, there's a point where I think the numbers have come down, but we were averaging one or two overdose deaths a day just from fentanyl. And you see people that you can tell are addicts. They have the foil in their hand. They're bent in sort of a certain way. You call it the fentanyl fold. And it's so cheap, you know, it hits $5. It's so addictive. And we don't have enough drug beds to keep up with it. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem.
Before you met this author, it changed your opinion on them. Who is it? What's the story behind it?
You know, I met Greg Hurwitz not too long ago, and I wasn't super familiar with his work. I'd heard great things, and I started reading his books, and he is just operating at a level beyond most of us. He puts things in his book and thinks of things that are just diabolical. And I'm glad he's one of the good guys, because that guy's got a live wire for a brain.
Your first book, 400 Things Cops Know, was nominated for an Agatha Award and won the Silver Falchion Award for Best Nonfiction Crime Reference. Was there a 400 first thing cops know that you left out?
You know what? If there was, it would probably be an additional joke about firefighters, you know, the glory boys. Everyone loves the firefighters, Sean. But on average, I'm told they work about 20 minutes a day.
And the rest of the time, they just work out.
They work out. They're on, match.com or whatever the equivalent is these days.
Best moment at a writing conference was where and with who?
I think meeting Dennis Lehane was a huge highlight. I think he's just a gold standard. He's one of those authors that just, it's not just that his books are so strong, but that he sort of hangs, I think, smart social commentary in there as well. So it operates on so many levels. That was awesome.
Adam, how long did it take for you to write Hardtown, and how much was rewritten from the beginning?
Well, it took me a good year and change, and I did some rewrites, but I have the benefit of having incredibly talented agent who used to be an editor and also an editor. And they went through it and just helped me make it leaner. I mean, you know, that's, as a thriller, that's what you want. You don't want any wasted space. Everything has to be sort of pointing right towards the plot and being the engine that drives the book. And I had some fat in there, and they helped me trim it.
Adam Plantinga, author of Hardtown, joins us beyond the mic. Let's talk writing. How much of the book was written at a gymnastics practice or meets?
Oh, yeah. I bring my laptop everywhere. If I have 20 minutes here or 30 minutes there, I try to make the most of it. You know, there's some authors that have, you know, they wake up at 5 every morning and knock out, you know, 20 pages or what have you. I don't have that kind of schedule or discipline. I'm just wherever I can.
In one part of the book, Kurt asks a source, quote, "I'm in Phoenix. I need $5,000 delivered to my hotel room, a change of street clothes, and a few hours with the best computer guy you can wrangle. I'll pay you back," unquote. Do you have someone in your life that you can make this kind of weird request for?
You know, I don't know that I do. It'd be nice to have a number you could call for such things. I got to look into that.
Which author has changed the way you see your craft the most?
You know, I'm a big fan of Nick Petrie. He writes the Peter Ash series, and he writes with an incredible amount of empathy. He has characters from all walks of life, but he makes you see the world through their eyes, which good writers do. And I have sort of zeroed in on that, and I try to do the same thing in my own writing. Just writing with empathy is, I'm really drawn to that.
How has policing changed since you started?
Boy, I mean, the first thing I think of is technology. I mean, it's just, that stuff has been a game changer, from body cameras on officers' chests to to drones that can give us sort of real-time information on crime scenes. I mean, we're just starting to explore AI. You know, a few decades ago, you just went out there with a pistol and a nightstick and someone told you, okay, go get them. And now, yeah, it's unbelievable the way technology has changed things.
Adam, admit it. How long could you survive if you had to in San Quentin?
I'm told the food is lousy, so probably 24 hours, and then I just curl into a whiny ball.
So what is your favorite home-cooked meal?
My wife makes a mean shrimp and grits. She's from the Carolinas, so she can really bring that sucker home.
Always good for a home-cooked meal. Let's talk policing. Have you ever thought of leaving policing for writing full-time?
You know, I think I still have some gas left in the tank in terms of law enforcement. I think it's a noble profession. I think, or I hope anyways, it's a good fit for me. That being said, if I'm going to err on the side of either leaving too early or leaving too late, I'd like to err on the side of leaving too early. Yeah, part of it maybe depends on if the books find a foothold out in the world. That could kind of accelerate things, but I got a couple more years of crime busting and sarcastic comments in me, I think.
Speaking of sarcasm, you said, quote, "We recently took on a suspect who had an FAFO neck tattoo. He effed up around with us and found out we will be arresting him on multiple charges. I would have pointed out how his tattoo had a reverse meaning that day, but he didn't especially strike me as a student of irony," unquote. What's your favorite story from the streets?
Boy, I think one of my favorite stories, one that I think of quite a bit, is, you know, if you're policing anywhere really, but especially a big city, you have a lot of things coming at you. And I remember one time my partner and I were investigating a street robbery outside a bar. And then a fight broke out in the bar. So we were trying to handle the robbery victim and then try to simmer down this fight. And then while all that was going on, some citizen walked up to us with a rabbit. And he said, I found this rabbit. Can you take it and get it home? And we had to tell that guy, we're not in rabbit detail tonight, man. Go
wow.
Wherever. But we got too much stuff going on. It was just like critical mass overload, but you get that sometimes.
As best as possible.
Yeah.
Was there something that you wanted to do with Kurt Argento that you would have left out for a third or fourth book?
Yeah. I mean, in the second book, he finds himself in a pretty bad spot, pretty down on his luck. And it's a dark book. It has a dark tone. I was able to trick my agent into continuing to represent me. And I was just able to swing a two more book deal with my publisher. God bless her. So his story is going to continue. And I want to give myself permission to write maybe a lighter story at some point. I mean, it's not going to be a rom-com, but it doesn't always have to be global implications and everyone dying left and right.
How did you trick your agent? I got to hear this story.
I don't know. I was just sort of persistent and had sort of a hopeful look on my face. And she did all the work and I just sat in the back and made sarcastic comments, which is really sort of my dream position to be in life.
Adam, what's the power of sarcasm today?
I mean, you have to be careful with it. I mean, if I'm at work, you know, I'm treating people with dignity. I save my sarcasm for mostly my coworkers, but boy, we take every opportunity to give each other crap. It's sort of the lifeblood of the job.
Let's talk friends and family with Adam Plantinga, author of Hardtown Beyond the Mic. Your brother went to law school. How disappointed was your mother when you went into law enforcement?
You know, that's a fair question. My folks rule. They couldn't be more supportive of my career, and I don't take that for granted. My dad's a minister. I think he, if I had followed him into ministry, then that would have been, I think, just fine with him. But I think they like that I'm in a service-related profession. And, you know, I think law enforcement and my English major are a better combination than one might think.
How has your writing evolved from your first failed novel to today? And who's helped you become a better author?
Well, yeah, again, my agent, Caitlin Blasdell, and my editor, Kersiah Depp, they, you know, they can go through my book and find 40 ways to make it better. I think in terms of, you know, with a thriller, one of the biggest things is pacing and making it lean and making the dialogue, make every word count. And, you know, I think having the right character say the right thing at the right time, it doesn't have to be necessarily flowery involved. It just has to be the right character saying the right thing at the right time. And that's kind of what I'm aiming for and what I'm hopefully getting a little better at.
You once said, quote, "As a cop, you're no superhero. You succeed because you use good teamwork and tactics, but you can still draw some inspiration from the costume ones." A friend once wrote me a card after I graduated the police academy that said, "Go get him, Superman." Still remember that card, unquote. Do you still have that card?
I do, and I'm actually going to see that friend at a book event in Houston in about 2 weeks. That was a card you gave me when I just got into the Milwaukee Police Academy in 2001.
How powerful was she as a friend?
I mean, she and so many others, you know, policing is, I mean, it's a tough gig, and there are some communities and families that are more supportive than others. I've had the blessing of having folks who have had my back, who have understood the job and what it can sort of do to you or change you, or how it sometimes leaves you a little flattened out. And I feel for folks that don't have that, because I know not everyone does.
Adam, was there a character that Argento interacted with that you'd like to flesh out in the future?
You know, I was a big fan of Julie Wakefield, who's in the first book. She's the governor's daughter, and she's, you know, she's no first responder, but she more than holds her own. She is a character that I could see revisiting. I think that her and Kurt's relationship sort of unpacked both of them in a way that was kind of fun for me as an author.
You once said, quote, "I once arrested a guy on Homeland Security's most wanted list and arrestable for attempted murder. His crime? He shoplifted a few shirts," unquote. Who's the one person that you felt bad about taking in?
When I was in investigations, I was assigned a felony assault where a guy with no prior criminal record, he got in a bar fight, and he ended up pretty seriously hurting the other guy. And I was investigating that, and he actually came to the station. He turned himself in and gave a full confession, just said, "You know what? I had too much to drink. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I hope the other guy's okay." That's not often the way it goes, but, you know, for some of these folks, there can be sort of there for the grace of God go I. So I remember that one.
17 years ago, you found the love of your life.
Yes.
How has your wife helped you the most as an author and as a policeman?
Well, I'll tell you, a recent example just yesterday is I'm not the most tech savvy, and she helped me send out a mass email about the release of my second book. So she helps me both emotionally. She cooks for me, brings me hot food, which is really the greatest thing ever. And she does tech support. She's a woman for all seasons. And she's also one of my best editors. She'll go through my books and gently suggest that I take out some of the passages that make me sound like a slack-jawed yokel.
What was the one section that she said, "I don't know"?
You know, she has been really helpful with, and this is something I'm still trying to sort of calibrate. The books are thrillers. They have a fair amount of violence in them. And I think especially in the first book, you need violence to tell that story. It's a riot in a maximum security prison. You can't tell it without it.
There's no pillow fights in prison.
No, there's really not. But she's helped me make sure that if there is violence, you know, some of it can occur off the page. And if it does occur, it has real world consequences. You know, it's not like a Western where people punch each other in the face 30 times and everyone's fine. The violence comes with the cost. And there's also sort of discussion about the morality of it, too. That's important to me. I mean, if a hero is going to shoot 20 people, maybe there should be a little reflection about that as opposed to him just sort of smoking a cigarette and staring out stonily into space.
As a college graduate, I'm going to ask you a very important question. Can you trust Marquette?
Sean, you cut me right to the quick. You know, talented team, terrific coach. You know, this season didn't go quite as well as I would have liked, but tip of the hat to Texas Tech. You're a Texas Tech guy, correct?
Correct.
They gave, was it Florida? They gave Florida all they could handle. And
stop evading the question. Marquette, yes or no? Can you trust them?
Yeah, I can and I will. How about Darvin Ham? He went to Texas Tech, right?
Darvin Ham did.
I just looked. He broke the backboard in college.
North Carolina game.
I just did a quick search on him, Sean. And do you know that one of his nicknames, I think this is with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yes.
One of his nicknames was Ham Slamwich.
Yes.
And you're not going to do better than that.
He won't say it, but in my mind, you can't trust Marquette.
That's maybe one of the...
Favorite type of call? And do you have a funny story about it?
San Francisco, I won't say this is my favorite call, but there's naked people all over the place. No one's got clothes on. It's actually not even a crime in San Francisco. And you sometimes are in a position where you have to arrest a naked fella. And you try to avoid those, but, you know, you can't always. So it just... You know, no one looks good in that situation. The guy doesn't look good. You don't look good. Sometimes he's sweaty and slippery and people are gawking and I don't know, to be avoided if possible. We actually, I carry pants in my equipment bag to give out to folks, you know, put some pants on if you would.
It's time for one big question with Adam Plantinga, author of the book Hard Town Beyond Mike. Adam, how do you relate to Argento from your own time on the beat? And what's the one fear you have every day?
You know, he's a fictional creation. We do have some similarities. I think we share some similar outlooks on life and the job. He may be slightly better at fighting than me, although I am taller. I can say that. Fear on the job. I think one of the things, and you know, this is something I talk to coworkers about. We have a lot of training, we have experience, we have equipment, but I think sometimes we fear that we might go to especially a critical incident and our efforts may not quite be enough. The job can throw so many things at you, especially things that there's no necessarily best practices for. So, you know, you do the best you can. You rely on sort of your past experience and your coworkers. But a lot of times you're sort of stepping into the great unknown.
He avoids rabbit detail, trusts Marquette, and wants you to read his book, Hard Town.
Being all shifty over here.
Where can people find you online?
I'm on the old Twitter. I know it's X now, but Twitter just sounds better. I just got on the Instagram. My daughter claims I'm not using it right, and that's very possible. I've drawn the line at TikTok. I don't have the bandwidth for that. But well, I'm also on LinkedIn. Are you on the LinkedIn there, Sean?
I'll hit you up on the LinkedIn.
All right. That's where people go to ignore each other, I think.
Adam Plantinga, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
And that, my friends, is Beyond the Mic. If you're enjoying these conversations, please check out another Beyond the Mic episode to find more actors, artists, and people you need to know.
We'd also appreciate a like and subscribe on the Good Pods app.